Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
It's Mitrovic. There it was. Great save from David De Gea. And now Manchester United want to send Anthony away. William missed it. Look at Sancho sprinting through the centre. Anthony's got to get his pass right. He has. Can Sancho get his finish right? He can. He thinks it was a handball by William. Well, VAR are checking it. And that's the camera from behind the goal. It's a red card for someone on the Fulham bench. Penalty kick. And it's a red card for William. As well, who's kicked off big style, and Fulham are losing their heads. Fulham now down to nine men. The manager's been dismissed as well, and Fernandes to level things up for Manchester United, and he does. What was Mitrovic thinking? Here's Shaw from Sancho in towards Sabitzer. It didn't take long. Manchester United take full advantage, and in the blink of an eye, 1-0 down to 2-1 up, and they're on their way to the semi-finals of the FA Cup.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. It might be the international break, but we have got tons to get our teeth into over the course of this podcast, not least an absolutely mad few minutes at Old Trafford on Sunday, which we've got some differing views on. Interesting, yeah? We'll get to that a little bit later on, I think. But I need to introduce you to our band of merry men. Andy Mitten, how are you doing?
Exhausted, if I'm honest, mate. I've been travelling, went from Seville to Manchester.
Hard work covering football, isn't it?
I don't expect any sympathy here, but you ask me how I'm doing, I'm giving you a straight answer. I got up at 4 this morning and I'm absolutely exhausted.
I don't expect you to be honest either, to be honest, but that's fine. How are you doing, Laura? Are you better? Well, good, mate. Yeah, thanks. Let's move on.
You're correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Had a lovely weekend.
Excellent. Right. United weren't great yesterday, were they? And that was such a crazy moment that I don't know whether to start with United's performance or the moment, but I think I'm going to start with the performance. You were there, Andy. What did you make of it?
I thought it was really bad in the second half, and United got a bit of luck with all those red cards, took advantage of it. I think you could pick out bright moments. I thought Anthony really made an impact when he came on. But I spoke to the manager after the game and his view was basically the opposite of mine. He thought his team had played very well in the first half. I remember my feeling at halftime thinking, this is dreadful. Manchester United are slowing matches, starting slowing games. I thought Fulham did really well. Just as we saw moments when Southampton did really well and even Leicester City did well. I thought that Fulham put the ball into positions which hurt Manchester United. They often went long, they put it into the corners. I thought Luke Shaw struggled in the first half. And they deserved to go ahead. And I spoke to some of the Fulham players after the game and they were absolutely floored about it. I'm happy because United won a fourth consecutive FA Cup game 3-1 at Old Trafford because we're going to Wembley yet again because Manchester United keep getting wins. So an hour in yesterday, I'm thinking, where on earth's a goal going to come from here?
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Bang, 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 you get the win, another win. And if that's become a trend, then that's a great trend.
Yeah, finding sources. Excuse me. Yeah, finding sources of goals can be a challenge. I don't think we quite saw that source coming, Laurie, did we? I'm struggling to remember a more madcap moment at Old Trafford than that whole incident.
I didn't know we got Sean Dyche on the podcast as a guest host.
I've gone very croaky, haven't I, all of a sudden? I've got no drink left either to solve the problem.
You sound good for it, to be fair. Could do some voiceover work. Yeah, I, like Andy, I thought United were going out. I thought it was going to be one of those games where, like Portsmouth in the 2007-08 season, where United are thinking, we're on course.
Similar feel, wasn't it?
And then you kind of get unstuck. And in that game, obviously, it was controversial refereeing decisions sort of against Manchester United, whereas clearly they've benefited from... I mean, it wasn't a controversial decision, though, was it? I know that Marco Silva was suggesting it should have been a penalty in the first half.
Well, it became controversial, didn't it? But
it was the clearest red card.
Surprising the referee didn't spot it in the first place.
Well, exactly. It happened so quickly, maybe that's the only sort of excuse for the referee. But that's what kind of really confused me about the Fulham players and manager reaction, in that it was the VAR that sent him to the screen. The referee in the first instance missed it. So their anger at him is really displaced. And yeah, I mean, they absolutely lost their heads. I thought it was disgraceful, the scenes that we saw, because not only did you have Mitrovic, you know, getting sent off for sort of manhandling him, you also had Bernd Leno wagging his finger in his face that had sprinted all the way from his goal, and which I thought he was lucky not to get some kind of sanction. They just all, there wasn't kind of one player or two players that were trying to calm things down from their half. It was David De Gea that was trying to calm Mitrovic down, for example. Silva had lost his head, and... I spoke to Adam Crafton, who was there for us yesterday, because he asked Silva after the game, you know, what did you say to him then? You know, you must have said something to get red carded. And he was kind of like suggesting that he couldn't really remember exactly. He was like, well, you remember everything else that happened around the game. So, you know, fair play to Adam for kind of pushing back on that.
That's what Adam said. Nice.
Yeah.
One,
so, but I think he sort of mockingly said, oh, I said, have a nice afternoon. So clearly he said something, as well as coming out of his technical area, that has prompted the referee to give him a red card. But it was it then... You know, United totally seized the initiative. You know, they kept their heads. You know, it could have been easy maybe to, you know, kind of allow that emotion to affect their game. Okay, they're also against nine men, so you'd think they should be able to get another one.
Two of the best players are off.
Well, yeah. But it happened so quick. You know, they went 2-1 up so quickly that, you know, it kind of... That I mean, it's such a shift of emotion and thinking that from they're going to go out where they're going to get a goal from to then all of a sudden 2-1 up against nine men, brilliant, they're into the semi-finals.
Yeah, Andy, in terms of the response, it was incredibly impressive for United just to seize the moment like that, wasn't it? It was absolutely ruthless. It's the type of thing that we've seen from United over the years at their very best. That was a really encouraging quality about yesterday, considering, like we said before, a performance that was a bit lackluster.
It was incredibly quick as well. First of all, Bruno took the penalty in front of the Stretford end because, like you two, I thought Manchester United were going out. I just couldn't see where a goal was going to come from. And then, bang, bang, two more goals. I spoke to Tete, the Fulham player, afterwards. I said, what do you do when you're playing with nine men? And he just sighed and went, you know, what can you do? It's just wave after wave just coming at you. I said, is it impossible? He went, it's not impossible, but it's close to being impossible. I feel that Sabitzer scoring was really good for him. He played a lovely ball through to Marcus Rashford earlier on. He took a good shot on target in the first half. A first half when there were some pretty weak shots. I mean, Wout Weghorst had a terrible effort on goal. I know he worked hard, but that shot on target, it was... Maybe he miss-hit it. Cut him some slack on that. I mentioned Antony earlier on. He started the counter, which ultimately led to the penalty. So he definitely deserves his name in lights. I know he's someone who divides opinion, and I completely understand why. But it just shows how United rely on Marcus Rashford. And when Marcus Rashford doesn't score, you think, where are these goals coming from? I thought Martinez did well at the back, but it was a very patchy performance. I can praise and criticise Aaron Wan-Bissaka, for example, for some of the things that he did. I thought he was better when Antony came on. I thought David De Gea made some... David De Gea kept Manchester United in the game.
Kept him in the cup, didn't he?
He kept United in the cup. And I'm glad we're in the cup. And I'm glad Laurie mentioned that Portsmouth game, because Patrice Evra said that was his low point as a Manchester United player in terms of results. He was gutted because he saw no reason why United shouldn't have beaten Portsmouth in a year when they were champions of Europe and champions of England.
Rio Ferdinand being in goal, maybe that was a reason.
Yeah. Well, I know Erik ten Hag wants to win all the trophies. He's actively, you know, that can make a season. If Manchester United won two trophies this season, and I think the semi-final draw is a good one, get through against Brighton, Sheffield United in the final at Wembley, it could be looking all right for Manchester United in the FA Cup.
Yeah, it certainly could. Watching that whole incident back today with sort of a fresh mind, I wonder if has Jadon Sancho not scored, Laurie?
Well, because Williams slapped the ball out the net. Are you suggesting that he took too long and he should have made it not even possible for William to get his arm in the way?
Well, he almost didn't even contemplate the finish or anything like that in that moment because so much else was going on. But when you look back at it, he's trying to squeeze it on this really narrow gap between William and the post rather than the rest of the goal. Well, it was bizarre, wasn't it?
It reminded me a bit of his goal against Liverpool early in the season where you're thinking, hit it, and then he drags it back and he just passes it into the side of the net. And in moments, he obviously
and
is
very
cool.
And it worked that time, didn't it?
Yeah. I agree with you that when he was doing it, I was like, he's missed the chance here. But actually, and then he put it back inside and it was, you know, it was going in. So, you know, it should have been his goal. Andy's right to touch on Anthony because we do give him stick and, you know, we want more from him, certainly, you know, left and right and going and beating players. But he made the right choice in that counter-attack. His speed got him away and then he made the right pass at the right moment. And then Sancho, yeah, kind of heart in mouth moment, but did the right things and ultimately got United level, I think, in a way that,
well,
you know...
he did the best thing. He forced a handball, which then led to three red cards and the tie completely turning around. So
that's
Jadon Sancho couldn't have played it any better.
Yeah. We're playing checkers. He's playing chess, you know. He's like thinking, you know, 12 moves ahead. But like a sort of serious point to that is that, you know, if William doesn't handball, if he just lets it in, it's 1-1 and Fulham have got 11 players and they've got the manager on the touchline. If Willian handballs it, okay, it's a red card penalty. Mitrovic doesn't need to do what he did because then it's, you know, they're 10 men. And I know Tete's saying it's, you know, it's kind of impossible with 9 men, but Mitrovic was playing really well.
He was,
and Fulham were troubling United and they could easily get a corner or a set piece in the final third and kind of win it with a free kick header. So I just thought it was a total dereliction of your responsibilities as a footballer to lose your mind that much, because it totally changed the whole complex of the game when it actually, each different stage of it could have gone a little bit different and would have actually still given Fulham something to cling on to.
Yeah, 100%. I think with Mitrovic as well, Andy, I don't know what your reading was of it at the time, but the minute that you lay a hand on an official in an aggressive manner like that, I don't think there's any other alternative than to send the player off. And there'll be debates, I'm sure, amongst the Football Association about exactly how to deal with this and what punishment he gets. And immediately online, there was a hell of a lot of whataboutery with Bruno Fernandes and what he did with the assistant referee at Anfield in the defeat a few weeks ago. Now, my personal opinion was that I thought Bruno was quite fortunate on that occasion, because I tend to think that if you're going to touch an official in any sort of aggressive manner, Mitrovic clearly was far, far worse than Bruno Fernandes. I think you're running the risk of being sent off. And it's the message it sends to everyone else as well, isn't it? That officials shouldn't be sort of approached in that manner.
It happened so quickly. One minute you've got the 2,500 Fulham fans, so didn't come close to selling a third of their allocation, singing Mitro's on fire. Because, as you say, he had been playing very well. When I saw it replayed, I thought, you've got to go off for that. There's no excuse there.
Yeah.
I could see the melee on the touchline in front. I don't know what was said. None of us do. I thought it was a clear penalty. And it happened really quickly. And I saw people run straight into the middle of the pitch. And I got it into my head that, what's Benny McCarthy doing there? And I'm thinking, is this Benny against Mitrovic? Benny grew up on the Cape Flats. He played in the Gangster League. He's not someone who's going to be scared of anybody, despite big, massive Serbian Mitrovic. And I'm looking, thinking, what are you doing? No, it's not Benny, actually. It's one of the Fulham assistants. Benny's just being really professional and staying in the background. Good job of checking stuff like this out, isn't it, being a journalist? Because he didn't leave the bench.
Before you say it on a podcast or anything like that, definitely. Laurie, I said at the top that we had a maybe slightly differing view on the podcast about the whole sort of Mitrovic-Bruno Fernandes thing. Go on then.
Well, no, yeah, because I agree with you that officials should get more protection and more respect. I kind of am a bit tired of, you know, the way that players, you know, they swear at them, don't they, during the game and, you know, go up to their faces and kind of get right in them, and it's just unsavoury to me. And the point you're making, I suppose, is what example does that set then to, you know, people playing, you know, kids playing grassroots or whatever, or people on Sunday League. I mean, I play a six-a-side league very badly at Macclesfield.
I can vouch for that.
Macclesfield's ground. Yeah, you can. and there's referees there that obviously, you know, they get paid for doing it, but it's, you know, you don't want to then have that adopting your persona when you're playing in football matches. And I do think that if you allow it to exist in the Premier League. It kind of, I don't know, subconsciously sort of suggests to people that it's okay. And you get some awful treatment of referees at grassroots level, you know, violence against them. And I don't know, I know that's, you have to take each case on its own merit, but I do feel like the general tone should be one that is addressed. But then I'm probably going to be a hypocrite here and contradictory and suggest that I thought if you send Bruno off for that, I don't know, it would be very harsh in my view, because my different thought on it was that the assistant referee in that case sort of touched Bruno first to kind of get him away from Trent Alexander-Arnold, and Bruno was kind of like, well, I'm sort of giving you a little bit back, and it was a kind of quick motion and he was off and away, whereas Mitrovic's was a full-on, you know, aggressive, persistent sort of act with the referee. But I don't know, am I being double standard? Am I being sort of red tinted spectacles there?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but that's fine. We are on Talk of the Devils after all. I think the wider point for United now, Andy, is decisions. They were already in the spotlight a little bit with Erik ten Hag's comments after a few of the matches recently where he felt decisions had not quite gone United's way. But for a meltdown of this proportion to happen when United sort of were denied a penalty, and the reaction after it and online and everything else, it's going to be something that the club has to ride out again, isn't it? It's been a long time since people were getting properly riled up about Manchester United getting decisions going for them that were actually correct in the first place.
Isn't that wonderful, though? Isn't that what we love?
Fantastic.
I think there's a couple of things here, apart from it being wonderful. We've got 2 weeks now just to calm everything down, just to let attention switch elsewhere. Fulham undid themselves yesterday. They were their own worst enemy. They played really well. And there will always be contentious decisions. I watched closely the offside yesterday when the ball went across. United are winning. They're just riding this storm really well. And I know what Ten Hag's doing in terms of he's always looking at the long term. His narrative is very much, I'll support my players. I said to him after the game, are they tired? No. And I'm thinking, they must be. No, they just want to play football all the time. So you can see how he's lining it up. He's not giving anyone excuses anywhere. But the fact is, he knows they're tired because people are having days off today. People are being told just to, you know, relax a little bit. We've come through an intense period where things have mostly gone Manchester United's way. I think we should also credit the way that United have bounced back again after a heavy defeat. So that's three straight wins. After Liverpool, beat Betis twice, disappointing draw against Southampton, but beat Fulham. I think you can say that that is a recovery. They didn't let that Liverpool defeat get to them too much. And we get a breather now. We can plan another trip to Seville, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on.
Chips.
And many other things. Another trip to Wembley, which I'm sure we can talk about as well. I don't think you'll see the same demand there that we saw for the League Cup final, partly because fans have just been there, but partly because you get a much bigger allocation as well. So that'll be great. Manchester United against Brighton, a repeat of the 1983 FA Cup final, albeit in the semi-final. And I love it. It is intense. It's very expensive for fans. At least fans cannot have any more money automatically taken out of their bank account when United get drawn at home again.
Money will come out for the semi-finals of the Europa League, though, when they get through that.
It's a Europa League money. Yeah.
And still one more.
Starting to hear people talking about, you know, potential finals. Have you looked at flights to Budapest? You know, and I know this is a good way off, but speaking about like this on March the 20th, compared to where we were on March the 20th last year, I'm having it all day long. It was an absolute disaster last year. And you're just looking on, when's Christian Eriksen going to be back? When's Casemiro finishing? It's great. Yeah, I feel really plugged in as a Manchester United fan. I think it's a great time to be a Manchester United fan at the moment. And yet I've got worries all over the pitch because you can see that the team has got so many deficits. And if Casemiro was to miss the rest of the season, for example, it would be significantly depleted. But I mean, he gave Harry Maguire a second straight start. I thought Harry had done well in Seville. I thought he did less well against Fulham. But you can see how he's working. He's carrot and sticking with a lot of players. And if players play badly, and a lot of them are playing badly, he drops them and he brings them back in. And Anthony's probably the best example of that. Drives everyone mad. But then has a good second half against Fulham, and everyone's thinking, okay, we want to see more of you.
You feel better after that, Andy. You got a lot off your chest in that answer.
Sorry, boys.
That's all right.
I can't work out whether he's happy or sad at the moment.
Somewhere in between.
I'm happy, Laurie.
Good.
I'm happy because I went home the other night in Seville without going out with you. So that was a good decision. I'm tired, but I am happy. I think Manchester United fans have got to be happy at the moment because it's been a really good season.
Yeah, okay. If you want to read more about Manchester United's win over Fulham, Adam Crafton has the report on The Athletic and refers to just how many matches are building up now for Manchester United. If you're not a subscriber, remember that there is that offer if you want to go and read The Athletic articles. It's £1.99 for the first 12 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and this week on the Athletic Football Podcast, we're bringing you a two-part special on the future of football. What will the expanded 48-team World Cup look like? And is it actually such a terrible idea? Plus, UEFA against FIFA, a Super League in disguise. How would you feel if your team became part of a multi-club model? There is a lot to get stuck into. Matt Slater, Adam Crafton, and Laura Williamson will be with us. Just search for the Athletic Football Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Intriguingly then, on the 20th of March last season, we were recovering from Manchester United going out of the Champions League. We had Premier League matches to look forward to, but we were about to find out that United weren't going to be in the Champions League next season. You're right, Andy, the whole mood around the club is totally different to this point of 2022. In terms of the semi-final, Laurie, are we allowed to look slightly beyond it at the prospect of what the final might look like, or are we sort of counting our chickens a little bit too much? Considering Adam's point in his piece, actually, that the matches are really building up now for United, aren't they? It has to be a concern that.
What, are you looking forward to the War of the Roses? Lancashire versus Yorkshire, Sheffield United. Is that what you're referring to there, Ian?
Or Battle of the Red and Whites, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, a Manchester derby in the FA Cup final would be, I think, a pretty special occasion. You'd have that demand that Andy referenced for the Newcastle game. There's obviously been an FA Cup semi-final there.
12 years ago. Incredible.
It's mad, isn't it, that? And City came out on top, so it wasn't a great atmosphere, great occasion, that one, for United.
It was a horror, mate.
That was the start of City beginning to show that they are a serious team. And obviously they've gone on and been the dominant force for more than a decade now. I don't think you can look beyond Brighton, you know, particularly the way United played against Fulham. I mean, if they play like that, as Roy Keane said after the game,
yeah, true.
They'll get beat by Brighton because they have got a nice blend now under De Zerbi of defensive security, but also attacking intent. You know, they've got a really nice way about them when it comes forward. I mean, Mitoma's been a revelation this season. On the wing for them, you've got McAllister, who's come from a World Cup win. Obviously, they've sold Trossard, and they still keep scoring goals. So, yeah, I don't think United can look beyond. I mean, maybe the fact that they've played at Wembley already this season will benefit them, and the fact that Brighton, it's a rarer occasion for them. And I don't know, the scale of the pitch, you know, is a bit of a bigger area, isn't it? But, you know, I'm sure they could get accustomed to that. But so, yeah, but I think, as Andy's sort of saying, the prospects are appealing, and as Adam mentions in his piece, if United do get through in the FA Cup and in the Europa League, they could be playing 19 games by the end of the season, where you compare that to Newcastle, I think it's 12 just in the league, and Tottenham just 10. So I know that they're kind of imploding down White Hart Lane, but They're not, you know, they're only a point off, aren't they? I know they've played a game more than United, sorry, a couple of games more, but they're not, you can't discount them necessarily. So, yeah, I think that Champions League spot should be theirs, but it's not a guarantee. And Ten Hag, I mean, as you say, Andy, he's not allowing any excuses in terms of fatigue, but it does feel like that's got to be an element of how they're playing and kind of grinding out games and having these sporadic moments of games where they can do things and then it wins them. You know, the tie against Betis was won in a moment, really, and this tie against Fulham was as well. So they're not playing consistently well throughout the game, but they're having these bursts of energy. I mean, you look at Bruno Fernandes. I mean, we did it after the game. I know you had the best stats, Ian, but I managed to pluck that other one out about him being the most used player in Europe, and he's there at the end in injury time, playing the whole game, scoring a goal.
Incredible.
And I think ITV mentioned the old stat before the game, I was told. So, yeah, thanks. Flattery. You know,
Athletic good subscribers, of course.
Well, they must be, clearly.
£1.99 a month for the next 12 months for the ITV crew.
It was a great stat. My producers on Indian television said, can we just give you the statistic about Bruno Fernandes? And I'm thinking, I was with Laurie in a press box on Thursday night when he told me that and he was going to write it. And 3 days later, I've got people on the other side of the world saying, this is really interesting. Can you talk about it?
Oh, that's mint. Brilliant. Love that. But I do think how Ten Hag manages his team. So McTominay came into midfield. He came off. I'm not sure he had the great game. And Maguire came in again for Varane, who has a little injury and didn't have a great game. So that's the slight concern that these players, some of the players that are coming in, perhaps aren't seizing it as you'd hope. I do think Marcel Sabitzer had a good game, as Andy sort of alluded to. Perhaps there was moments in the first half where he could have shown for the ball a bit more, but the way that he uses the ball, he does create chances and obviously score with a really nice finish. And if you look at his stats, they're actually really good since he's joined. You know, they're comparable with Casemiro for interceptions and tackles, but then also even better than him for kind of chance creation. So I do wonder at the end of the season, depends on how much he might cost from Bayern Munich, but I do think that United should have a look at that, maybe making that permanent, because he just seems like a good fit as a squad player.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on, definitely. In terms of the FA Cup for the women as well, they might also be facing Brighton in the semi-finals. That draw is taking place on Tuesday, but United saw off Lewis to get through to the last four. There'll be no Manchester City to fear or look forward to, depending on which way you see it in the final, though, because they were knocked out. There is Chelsea in there, though, Andy, as well, who are obviously the team to beat, really, still in women's football, but more positivity for the club.
Yeah, after that real big setback, not unexpected setback against Chelsea in the league, to go through in the FA Cup was definitely good. Manchester City going out. I just see the name Chelsea in women's football and think, can anyone get beyond them? I think Manchester United's women's team have got to get a result against Chelsea but it has been a very good season for Manchester United women, just as it has been for the men's team. And of course, there's that game coming up at Old Trafford where they're expecting a huge crowd, maybe even a record crowd, because I think the crowds at Old Trafford for the women's games, they've been good, but I wouldn't go beyond good. I think there was one of 20-odd and 30-odd. But I sat in a crowd last year of 91,000 for a women's game at Barcelona. And I think there's a lot of room, especially given how strong the crowds are at Old Trafford. And I'm going to write about this for The Athletic as well, for the women's match, because the tickets are priced really competitively as well. So they're in a good place. Top three in the league, winning the FA Cup, that'd be fantastic for the women.
Couple more news lines to wrap up, Laurie, if that's all right. Obviously, people are keeping a close eye on all the goings-on with the takeover. There's been yet more articles on The Athletic about this, so go and have a look at that. There's also news of a new hire as well. The Adidas exec, Matt Hargreaves, recruited for football negotiations. Matt Judge's replacement, if people remember the role that he played. What stands out to you from those stories in the last few days?
I mean, the takeover, you can't take your eye off, really, because it's obviously happening as we speak. You know, the fact that they actually had Richard Arnold greeting Sir Jim Ratcliffe at Old Trafford. The red carpet was literally rolled out, which I found quite amusing.
The picture was interesting, wasn't it? What do you think? What did you make of the picture, Laurie? Because it's unusual to get that picture, isn't it?
So the video of him going in, you mean, or what?
Yeah,
picture?
Well, the video, all pictures, yeah, both. You know, Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Richard Arnold shaking hands. You know, that was not an image that we got with any of the other bidding parties.
Yeah, I mean, I'm told that happened with the other ones, you know, same kind of greeting, and not just uh, the, Sheikh Jassim's bid, the Qatari bid, but also other investors. And you can't forget Elliot, I think, met the previous week. They were at Old Trafford, obviously, for a game. So I think maybe it's just the fact that the cameras were there, ready, waiting. I think maybe they'd had a trial run from the Thursday, and knowing that actually if we get to Old Trafford, we might be able to see these guys, because it was, I think it was just in the Sun, wasn't it, the kind of Qatari delegation, whereas this was, you know, BBC, and so they were kind of ready. It was funny that, you know, he's got like a tour of the megastore, and like I'm thinking, is he going to put an extra couple of zeros on his bid, like having seen, you know, the kind of the shirts flying off the shelves or what? But
just very early Christmas shopping he was getting sorted, I understand.
Well, maybe he could get a discount, you know, if you yeah, put a bid in, we'll do your 2-for-1 on, you know, Marcus Rashford shirt. But so I think that's something that we've got to keep an eye on, you know, the takeover. It's alive, isn't it? You know, it's Rain set out at the very start of all this a full takeover in the first quarter, so we're coming up to the end of that, aren't we, with it being March 20th. So I think you've got to kind of keep alert to that, and the fact that they're actually flying in and people are seeing it, it feels there's obviously different reasons to why maybe they're getting a bit of PR around, you know, certain visits and certain meetings, maybe. You know, I think there's obviously an idea that you want to get people on side for your bid, certainly. But at the end of the day, it'll be whoever bids the most, I'm sure, with the Glazers. But the other hire as well, Matt Hargreaves from Adidas, apparently a very impressive guy. And United needed an appointment in that position. They had Tom Keane as an interim employee in that position last summer, and he worked with John Murtough on doing the Casemiro deal, for example, and then so they needed someone. There's too much going on for them not to have somebody that's sort of specifically dedicated to that mode of operation.
I think with Matt, apart from his dad being a subscriber to United We Stand, he's got good red credentials. A mate of mine said to me, do you know, me, another mate and Matt, we started from the banks of the River Irwell on the terrace at the upper part of the Leppings Lane at Hillsborough in 1997. We got beat 1-0. So if I'm getting good intel on new Manchester United employees like that, then I'm quite impressed by that. I wish him well.
I'm going to keep my eyes very closely pointed towards the letters section in the United We Stands fanzine, just to see if there's a Mr. Hargreaves writing in with any sort of pearls of wisdom ahead of the summer transfer window.
He does get in touch with me several times over the years. I know who he is. He's a lovely fella. And if his son's working for United, and he's a proper United fan as well, he's actually worked in cases around Manchester United in the past. So I think it's good. I was encouraged when I heard that.
We will be talking about the potential takeover of Manchester United more during this international break, so look out for that on future podcasts. But remember, there'll always be updates on The Athletic. There is that offer that's on at the moment. If you want to take advantage of that, go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Sign up now.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, the last item on the agenda is the return to the capital of chips. Manchester United drawn against Sevilla in the Europa League. And Laurie Whitwell, you must be absolutely delighted that you can fly over to Spain once more and sample the best of the local delicacies on offer.
I can't believe this has become a thing, you know.
You said you ordered it.
Well, I ordered something else that came with chips, and then I posted a picture of the meal that Andy's basing his whole spurious claim on, and people replying to me going, there's not even that many chips there.
You'd eat them, yeah?
I did eat them. Listen, they're there, the carbs, I needed the energy. When I've tweeted, it's sort of, you know, an ironic message saying, Seville seems a nice city, any tips? all I'm getting is just people chips in the reply. One guy posted a GIF of chips, which I didn't even know was a thing. So yeah, thanks for that, Andy.
You can find it.
This has become an issue now.
Andy, the great thing is this might actually give you a reason to write a new guide to Seville for the next round, because you know they might think that the Athletic might just run the Real Betis one, but we've got some more local intel from Laurie here. You're going to have to update it now, aren't you?
I'm more than happily updated. This is how I earn my living. People were saying to me,
I'm trying to help you.
No, good. If my editors are listening to this, we want a brand new Seville angled guide to Seville. I'll happily do that. Looking forward to it. And I will be more professional in this guide if I'm commissioned it than one we did to Dortmund in 1997, where we basically made up a load of places that people, that United fans should visit before the Champions League semi-final. And this was before the internet, when people could check things on the phone. And we said that there was a street called the Peisen-Scheisenstrasse, which to our thick minds sounded like the piss and shit street. And we said it was full of German girls who loved English lads from the north of England especially. And it was going back to the soldiers going after the Second World War. And we were just laughing writing it. We published it and we were damned. But a fella came up to me in Dortmund and had a go at me. Said he's been looking for the Peisen-Scheisenstrasse for like all afternoon. And clearly it didn't exist.
I love the idea that you might have been asking the locals for directions as well.
We made a pub up in Manchester once called the Stoughton Helmet, because we had that many people asking us for like tickets. People would email in and say, could you get us 4 tickets for Liverpool away? So we just decided to send everyone to this imaginary pub called the Stoughton Helmet, where there was this made up barman who'd sort your tickets out for face value. But the lads took it one further. They had a big flag made. It cost them like £200, Stoughton Helmet Reds. So they started taking it to away games. This pub just didn't even exist.
Can I chip in here as well and just let the listeners in on how much Andy knows about places, though, seriously? So in this sort of tweet that I sent out and sort of asking for any tips, you know, it's kind of gone over the head of some people, and it's really sweet that it has, you know. But Teresa is one of these people that's replied to me very, very earnestly and said, you book at the Mercure, it overlooks the stadium, fly to Malaga, it's cheaper, quick and easy, and cheap on the train to Seville. We'll get on to the trip between Malaga and Seville in a second. But so I put this in the group and said, I'm not sure Teresa's necessarily picked up on the fact that I'm kind of having a joke here. And what does Andy say? He says, tell her it's a Novotel that overlooks the stadium. How does he know what brand of hotel overlooks Seville Stadium?
I've stayed in that hotel so many times that I know that it's a Novotel. Yeah, I've got a brain full of this useless information. So if I can somehow monetize it in the way of making a living and producing guides, and you know, I'm more than happy to do another guide, then I'm quite happy to do
He's
that.
Plugging it again.
Well, just to sort of tap into your knowledge then, tell us about the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan Stadium.
Honestly, I could talk about that stadium for 10 minutes non-stop, but clearly we're not going to be able to do that.
Please don't.
It's got an amazing mosaic outside, which was done for the 82 World Cup, showing all the teams that have played there. Got a really striking cantilever roof. It seats 44,000. They should expand it. They really should. It used to hold 70,000. It staged the Europa League final last year between Rangers and Eintracht Frankfurt. It staged the 1986 European Cup final between Steaua Bucharest and Barcelona. Barca were massive favourites, and Steaua were the last team from Eastern Europe. No, because Red Star won it. Well, they won it anyway. And the goalkeeper, Duckerdam, who I went to visit the week before COVID.
You just made him up.
Three or four penalties.
He sounds like a character from your Dortmund guide.
Google Helmut Duckerdam.
Oh, come on.
I swear he saved three or four penalties in the European Cup final. It is an incredible story. I went to see him in March 2020 at his home in Bucharest. So this is like 5 days before the COVID lockdowns. I got to his house at 10 in the morning and he had spirits waiting for me on the table. If I would have drank what he offered me, I would have been absolutely lagging by noon. I didn't, but Duckerdam was very generous with his time. He's got an amazing story, and the highlight of his life came in that stadium in Seville. It's a good stadium. United fans visited it in 2018. It's got a cracking atmosphere. We can talk more about it closer to the game, but
yeah, we will.
All right, I'll stop now, 2 minutes into my 12 minutes talking about the stadium.
Thank you, Andy. On a serious note then, just to wrap up the podcast really, on the Europa League, Laurie, what did you make of the draw for Manchester United? Because obviously we learnt about the semi-final opponents as well. And what did you make of Arsenal going out of the competition after we'd recorded the last podcast? We didn't really see that coming when we were talking through the options for the next round.
Yeah, well, I'm happy at that because Lisbon is a brilliant city. So if there's a prospect of United going there rather than London, then great. And there is obviously in the semi-final, right? So the fact that we actually get the semi-final, we can plan ahead. I think that's a good move really by UEFA. I don't think it detracts from the kind of the mystique of where you might go next. I think it's actually quite a sensible thing. And people will be booking it, won't they, straight away? I was actually, as the draw was happening, I was in an Uber car from Seville to Malaga trying to get data roaming.
Had a bit of a shocker, didn't you, Laurie?
Yeah, well, so Andy sort of alluded to it there. So we had like a little sort of unwind after the podcast in Setas de Sevilla, which is right by where my hotel was. And it's a lovely, you know, wooden architecture, big landmark of the city. A couple of drinks, great, great time. Went back to my hotel room and wrote my Bruno Fernandes piece in the quickest time I've ever written a piece, in an hour. And I don't know if that then, you know, got the adrenaline going and I couldn't sleep. And all the while I'm hearing this kind of music blasting out from this club. So I thought, I'll have one more drink and, you know, we'll go to bed after that. Met some fans in there that listened to the podcast. Nick, if you're listening, thanks so much. Bought me a drink. Just meant that I got home a little bit later and I might have missed my alarm to wake me up for my 8 a.m. bus from Seville to Malaga. So, yeah, the only other alternative. I tried to get a later bus. They're all booked up. It's difficult to get a train, apparently. So Uber was the only thing. And I thought that Ubers, when they accept your fare, they know where they're taking you. So I got in this Uber and he sort of taps on his phone and the Google map comes up and he goes, Malaga? And like turns round over his shoulder and looks horrified. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, mate. Like, that's where I'm going. I thought you knew. So then we have this 2.5 hour drive and he's kind of like, he doesn't speak any English. And obviously I don't speak any Spanish, poor me. And he's kind of like, I can tell that he just does not want to be making this trip. He had his wife on the phone at one point and he was talking to her and he just said Malaga and you could hear her going, kind of losing her mind a little bit.
Not happy.
So yeah, thank you so much. I gave him a tip at the end of it and it's on me. I messed up. So yeah, thanks so much for taking me to Malaga and letting me get my flight back.
Do you want my version of that? So I go out and have a beer with Laurie and it's really good. We're having a good laugh. It doesn't cover any of his inglory this, but I was explaining the lyrics to Shakira's new song, rather embarrassingly.
Okay.
I said to him, I'm going to stay out till 1 because I've got to get an early train back. I've got to get from Seville to Salford. I left him at 2. I got a cab home. I got up the next morning. I was absolutely knackered. I looked at my phone. At 5:57, he sent me a video of him stood in a bar. A disco, plate of chips in front of him. He's met some new mates who he's obviously talking about. And then he misses his bus. So he's saying to me, I'm going to miss my bus here. So getting a taxi from Seville to Malaga, that's like getting a taxi from Manchester to Newcastle. I'm not surprised the taxi driver's like, what? But as Laurie says, he's the one who's taken the booking. And it's a very expensive mistake for Mr. Whitwell.
It certainly is. I'd like to give him the right reply at this point, but I'm not sure whether we should. He's been shaking his head and smiling, so I think we'll leave it there and perhaps he'll bite back on the next podcast. Remember, there is that offer for The Athletic, £1.99 a month for a year when you subscribe at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Of course, you'll want to contribute in any way you can to Laurie Whitwell's future taxi journeys from Seville to Malaga, which will sure come in the next round of the competition. But Andy, thank you very much for joining us. Laurie, thank you as well. And thanks for listening at home. We'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.